The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
Hello, this is the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm not Trevor Dan, but we'll send our best wishes to him this week and hope he makes a speedy recovery. I'm Stuart Clarkson, and this week we mark 40 years of commercial radio in the northeast of England. At the end of this programme, we've got the usual Radio Moments slot with David Lloyd, and this week that'll feature audio from the launch of Metro Radio in Newcastle this week in 1974. Ahead of that, I'll be talking to one of the disc jockeys who was there right at the start, James Whale, pioneer of the late night phone-in. He's also, of course, celebrating 40 years in radio this week himself. First, though, what effect does having 40 years of history behind you have on how your station performs in your market?
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Delighted to say that we can talk to the content director from Bauer Radio in the northeast, who looks after Metro and TFM and Magic as well. It's Chris Pegg.
Hello.
How have you marked the 40th anniversary this week?
We haven't really done anything special, to be honest. I mean, we're really focusing on the here and now of Metro Radio and what the relevance is to our audience right now, and making sure that we've got really great local connections. Rather than looking back, I mean, we did toy with doing some stuff, but we just wondered how relevant it would be. And I think the uniqueness of Metro is that it's always been forging ahead. I think, you know, even when I started off in radio, you'd heard about Metro Radio, and obviously I started off in the Midlands because it was always doing new and unique stuff. So I think what we decided to do, rather than sort of look back over its 40-year history with our listeners, is really just sort of focus on what we're doing now and come up with new and inventive ideas. And I think that's why Metro has been so successful over its 40-year history.
And those people who were listening back in 74 aren't listening today, obviously, because you're a music station.
Out, and to be honest, we worked out that they were in their formative years. They were probably in their 60s. So what relevance that has is probably very little.
I suppose what sets you apart in your marketplace now is that you have got that heritage. Metro has been there 40 years and people grew up with it.
Yeah, no, but like any radio station and any brand, in that 40 years, there'd be sort of good times and not so good times. I mean, we're lucky at the moment, we're having some really good times. And there's been a real sort of renaissance of Metro Radio. And I think that's sort of testimony to the people who are working here right now. And really sort of focusing on the core beliefs, which I believe is what Metro started. And that's the sort of love of the Northeast, because anyone who's been to the Northeast know that people that live here absolutely love it. You know, it is probably one of the greatest places ever to sort of live and work. And I think that's been the ethos of Metro when it's been very successful, and certainly the ethos of the radio station right now.
And actually today I heard one of your newsreaders saying that at the end of the bulletin. That's your out cue, isn't it?
The greatest place on earth. And we've had that sort of out cue for the last 2 years. You know, it could be a bit of a radio cliche, I suppose, but the thing is, it's really believable, because this is probably one of the greatest places on earth in terms of the spirit, the attitude, but also the sort of vibrant nature of the northeast, to the sort of breathtaking coastlines and the rolling countryside. You know, I mean, it really has got everything. And I think what Metro's been doing, certainly over the last sort of 3 years, is really focusing on that. So still playing all the hits, still being a music station, but being a little bit more by really sort of bringing alive what it is to live in the northeast right now.
And as you say, obviously the people are passionate about the area. There's a real sense of community in the region. You've worked at other heritage type stations. I know you've been at places like Trent and Hereward. Were those stations, did they have that identity, even though they'd also been there a long time?
Well, that's a really interesting... I don't think anywhere's like the northeast, to be honest, because I think wherever people live, they would love where they live, but quite often they recognise their failings of those. You know, I work quite a lot in the Midlands as well, sort of the edge of Birmingham and stuff. But here in the northeast, people are genuinely passionate about where they live. There's a real sense of pride, and it is quite unique, and it is very, very special. And I think if you can capture that, like the guys have done at Metro, you just get, you know, incredible feedback from listeners and fantastic ratings, and you know, and it's allowed us to be quite creative and a little bit different at times with some of the stuff that we've done.
And in 74, obviously Metro was the first radio station in the Northeast. There were national BBC networks already. Skip forward 40 years, it's a very different marketplace that you're running your station in today, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very different marketplace and it's far more competitive than it's probably ever been. What I can tell you, though, is because of our focus on being local, being relevant and those local connections and sort of closer to our listeners and reflecting their lives, you know, Metro's just had its best radio for 10 years. And considering the competitive nature of the marketplace, that's quite incredible. You know, we've got the biggest reach, so the biggest possible audience, but we've also got the biggest share, even overtaking Radio 2. And there's not many markets that can do that. And there's not many heritage radio stations that have been able to achieve that and stay at the top of the game for as long as Metro has.
And the advantage that you've got is that some of the brands that are in your marketplace are relatively new. Obviously, Heart has only been there a couple of months now. Before that, it was Real. And before that, it was Century. And Capital used to be Galaxy. Even the smaller stations in Durham and Sunderland have been through name changes, and you haven't had that. You've got the consistency.
Yeah, but I think we don't really sort of focus on the sort of competition, really. What we focus on is a radio station that sort of delivers for our listeners. You know, I mean, our coverage of the Great North Run is probably second to none now in terms of radio terms, and we really sort of bring that to life. You know, we'll be at the Sunderland Air Show bringing that to life. You know, we've raised, I think, £1.5 million for Cash for Kids in the last year. And all that money has gone straight back into the sort of local community. So, you know, it's about the radio station connecting to the area. And I don't really matter what it's called. Obviously, it's great that it's called Metro Radio and it's been there for 40 years. But I think it's that local connection and sort of passion for the area that if you listen to Metro really comes through. Is what means that it's so successful.
That's Chris Pegg, who's Bauer's content director in charge of Metro Radio today. So let's go back to 74 now and speak to one of the first voices on air at Metro, James Whale. James, thanks for coming on the Radio Today programme. Tell us, first of all, what you remember about those early days at Metro.
Well, the day I arrived at Metro, the studios weren't built. We were all employed around about 6 weeks too early, and we arrived to loads of rubble. In fact, I walked into the reception in the studios that were then in Swalwell, and a guy came with a wheelbarrow and said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Puff myself up." "So what, I'm James Whale. I'm a disc jockey." He said, "Well, I don't bloody care about that. Get your jacket off, roll your sleeves up, and shift that rubble." And we kind of mucked him, but in a way, it was good because we had 6 weeks to acclimatise ourselves to the patch that we were broadcasting in. So we did 6 weeks where we went around, we met the people who made the decisions in the Northeast. We were shown what, you know, people think Metro is Newcastle, and people, of course, who live in Newcastle and Durham and Sunderland know that it's a lot more. So I know probably more about the Northeast of England than many people who've lived there all their lives. But it was an interesting day.
And most people remember you for the Night Owls phone-in, which you did for, I think, 6 or 7 years. But that wasn't actually part of the schedule from day one, was it?
I was an afterthought. Somebody they'd employed didn't turn up, and they rang me as an afterthought and said, "Was I still available?" They didn't think it'd be more than a couple of months, but would I like to come up and help the launch? So, you know, I packed in everything I was doing, and I was about 20, 22, I think, at the time. I went up to Newcastle with all my worldly possessions, not really knowing where it was going to end and what was going to happen. But no, I went up as just the general dog's body. So I presented, strangely enough, I presented the early evening news show. When I say early evening, I mean 4 o'clock in the afternoon, a half hour of news. Thereafter, I introduced taped programs until 10 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock, I did a two-hour music show. There was no such thing as phone calls. I decided to do phone calls after everything went pear-shaped. Every single thing went pear-shaped, including when they went on the air in the morning. If you listen to that tape that's going around at the moment, that is the original beginning. The jingle played at the wrong speed. That's how it started. They played the opening jingle and it went at the wrong speed in the days of tape machines. But no, I was then asked if I'd like to do the breakfast show because that was falling apart. And I said, "Oh, yeah, that'd be good. I'll do the breakfast show. That's amazing. I've only been in radio 2 minutes. And then a DJ, and I don't know whether he remembers it the same way, a guy called Dave Gregory, who I haven't seen him for 150 years. He'd been on Radio 1. He'd had some minor success on Radio 1, and he went to the boss and said, "Look, I think I should be doing the breakfast show. I've got more experience." And they succumbed to that. And I went to do a nightly show, 10 o'clock until midnight. In fact, not every night. It was just Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And then I did filling in and other bits and pieces. And I got quite bored. So I said to the boss, "Can I take phone calls?" And he said something along the lines, "You can do what you like, because we're really only interested in 6 to 6 broadcasting. And anything after 6, we just have to stay open till midnight to keep the IBA happy." So I said, "Well, I've heard this American radio and they take phone calls. And I thought I might do that." He said, "Yeah, whatever you want, whatever you want." And so what happened, I played a record. Before I played the record, I'd said something, I don't know, something in the news. There was some racist stuff in one of the shipyards. And I said, "This is ridiculous," something along the lines. How can anybody be upset because of the color of somebody's skin? You've got to be a nutcase to think that. And then the phones just went mad. I gave out the phone number. I said, "I bet you agree with me." Some bloke rang in and said, "You know, James, that's your the problem in life. You know, you don't understand when you're better off. You're not supporting your own kind." And this bloke, and I said, "You're an idiot." Not really thinking what I was doing. Right? I said, "You are an idiot. I have never heard anything so stupid in my life. Go away." Put the phone down. Went into a record. Phones went mental. Absolutely mental. I thought, "Hey, this is good. Must be people listening." So I kept on doing this. Following morning, program director rings up and says, "What did you do last night?" I said, "Well, I did phone in, like you said." We said, "Well, we've had the local paper on and people want to know what's going on. Because if you hear how they're going to be terribly nice to everybody, make sure everybody's our friend." And I'm going there sort of, I'm not being particularly rude. I don't think anybody agrees with racism, not normal people anyway. So, you know, was telling him what I think most people would say. But people liked it. And so the bosses said, "Well, you can do it, but you can only do it for 1 hour a night." Lots of people wrote in and said, "Hang on, why is he only doing it? We'd like him to do it more."
I mean, you didn't really have much competition, just really the national BBC stations. How high were the listening figures? I mean, did you get a sense of just how popular what you were doing actually was?
Not really. I mean, even now, you know, the figures are wonderful. You can spin them to do whatever you want. They were good. Listen, there was BBC Radio Newcastle and the legendary Frank Wappit. There was Radio 1 and Radio 2 and all this. But nobody was interested in that time slot that I broadcast in. So nobody bothered about that. I said, "Look, it's a huge audience. People are going to bed. People are working nights and they want to hear something rather than..." And my thought was always, I'm not putting people to sleep. That's Radio 2 was doing, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we even had a program called Sounds in the Night on Metro with a very breathy lady who would say, "And here's a lovely new single from Motown to help you soothe asleep." And I thought, what a waste of time. Anybody who's listening to me has got to be awake. So I would do it as if I was doing The Breakfast Show or any other program. I wasn't going to try and put people to sleep. And the more contentious and the more interesting and periodically, you won't get this now because people wouldn't be allowed to do it, but people would ring up and say, "There's one guy rang up and said, I'm standing on the Tainbridge, man, and I've bloody had enough. I'm taking it." And you got taxi drivers ringing in saying, "We're going to try and find him. We're going to get him." And they did. They got him and they pulled him off the bridge. And today, I don't think you'd get that on the air because we've all got producers. Then I was just the only one in the studio. I played a record. I went and I answered the phone calls myself. I put them through to the studio. I went back in, talked to all the callers, played another record and did it again.
So you left Metro after 6 or 7 years. Alan Robson took over your show, Night Owls. He kept the same format and 30-odd years later, he's still there. I guess that kind of shows just how big that show is on Metro still now.
No, I know. And in fact, I did an interview with him the other day. He rang up and said, "Will you sort of be part of our 40-year celebration?" I said, "Yeah, I'd love to." I said, "Are you still there?" He said, "Oh, aye, man, aye." And he is. And of course, he's completely different to the rest of the radio station, which is like, dare I say, every other commercial radio station now. But, you know, what's going to happen is that you and I are talking like this in our homes. Listeners, sounds like we're in a studio. I've just plugged in to an iPad, and I think you're doing it in the same way. Well, when I can work out how to take phone calls live, then who knows? You could do once a week a live late-night phone-in. And not only that, if everybody's on iPad, you can see it as well. There must be technology where I can have a computer screen and people phoning in, and I could probably get two people on and a couple of screens either side with different callers. Can you imagine the rude things that could... I mean, honestly, I could decide to show a bit of flesh when I'm doing the show, or who knows?
So after Metro, you went to Radio Air in Leeds. You did a programme for Yorkshire TV. 13 years on TalkSport, 5 at LBC, of course, BBC Essex, breakfast show now. What stands out for you from everything you've done in your 40 years in radio?
Oh, you have been checking up. TalkSport, my late night show, which I did really when that started, I loved. And people often say it ran its course. Who knows what the future is? What I'm most excited about is what I'm doing at the moment. And I've always wanted to do a proper breakfast show. And people said, well, you'll never get a job with the BBC, James. Yeah. And to be honest, it sounds a bit creepy, I know, because, you know, when we're in commercial radio, we're having a go at the BBC, and the BBC will change, but the BBC will not go, because there has to be an antidote to commercial radio. Commercial radio is now becoming bland. The BBC, and I don't like the word local, because in America, all radio comes from wherever it is. I work on a radio station based in the county of Essex, out on the... I also do some stuff on BBC Kent on the weekend, which I do a sort of... That's the nearest thing to my late night show, by the way, Saturday morning into the afternoon. But what I'm doing at the moment is the most exciting, because I think we are now looking, if the BBC realise this, that their future is with their regional, their smaller radio stations that can connect with people. We've got to learn that radio is a medium that is not secondary to television or anything else. Radio is a medium of its own, and actually is one of the better mediums to reinvent itself. I mean, I'm still on the radio. I'm still doing what I've always done, but I'm doing it like now. If you know, when I hear what I was doing 40 years ago, I am slightly embarrassed. My wife hasn't stopped pissing herself. I mean, to be honest with you, she's been sticking it all over the internet. And I said, hang on, can we not do that? Oh, no, she said, this is priceless. And it's like listening to those old movie actors. And we're all going, and don't forget this evening, we'll be doing a program for women at home. I mean, it really, and we've still got to realise that now radio is quite, it's not all about smooth playlists, the same 20 records. Don't you dare speak for more than 5 seconds or you're going to be in trouble. That sort of radio is really cheap to run, and the advertisers in commercial radio haven't really cottoned on to the fact that the audience on commercial radio, Stuart, and nobody is actually disappearing quite a lot. And they'll justify by saying, oh, well, there's many more radio stations now. But people will go and listen to something that actually gives them something other than what they can do. You can program your iPad, your phone, with all your favourite music. You don't need a radio station to do that.
I mean, a lot's changed in 40 years. Obviously, back then, there were just a handful of stations. Do you think if you were starting out now, that you would get on the air as easily? And would you have been able to have the kind of career that you have had?
Yeah, I actually do. I actually think it would be with the BBC. And I actually think that you get onto a BBC radio station somewhere, maybe the one in your town, maybe your local community radio station. And I think rather than copying the people, you know, the sort of radio that's already there, if you have an idea for something, look what Milesy did for Radio 1. I remember that his mum used to bring him into the studios at Radio Air, and I remember him interviewing me for his school radio station when he was about 14. And he was different. He did it in a different way. He had a different, which is just what you should be. You know, if I'd been younger, I'd like to think I could have been Moyles. That's exactly how I would have wanted my career to go if I'd been starting, if you like, 20 years later. And it's a shame that he's not wanting to do radio at the moment. We're on the verge of a renaissance, a radio renaissance. When I started, there were only a couple of radio stations, and it meant, okay, you might be able to get bigger audiences, but there weren't very many places. Now you've got community radio, you've got shop radio. I started Top Shop Radio. That was my idea to get me onto radio. I started it. It's still going. And now in every store all over the place, you have radio stations. Community radio, as I said, you've got RSLs. You've got all sorts of things now. I don't know. I find it easier to talk to people through the radio than any other medium, as you can tell, because I don't stop.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, we'll stop it right there then. James, great to talk to you. This is the Radio Today programme. David Lloyd's radio moments are on the way, including the audio of James from 1974 before the launch of Metro. First, let's get this week's news from Roy Martin.
Thank you, Stuart. From Radio Today's newsroom, this is the latest. Arqiva, Bauer Radio and UTV Media, open brackets, GB, close brackets, have teamed up to apply for the Digital 2 National Commercial Radio Multiplex. The new consortium is the only known bidder at this stage ahead of the closing date of October the 30th. We did ask Global Radio if they had any intentions to apply as well, and we got no comment. Ofcom has published a list of community radio stations which have failed to submit their annual reports this year. The regulator is currently keen to emphasise the rules which apply to all community radio stations after a number of issues have been made apparent in the sector this year. And Celador Broadcasting is continuing to grow with the purchase of Fire Radio's Ofcom licence, which covers Bournemouth, as exclusively revealed by Radio Today recently. The station is now broadcasting from Southampton. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, NewsBoss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Radio Moment. Let's start this week with a Kenny Everett sacking. Now, which one was this? It was the, oh yes, the driving test comment.
Finally, Mrs. Mary Payton, wife of the Transport Minister, has passed her advanced driver's test first time. She's been driving more than 30 years, but says she was spurred on to take the test by her husband's appointment. That's the news from the third floor, incidentally. Our next one, 11:30.
She only passed because she crammed a fiver in his hand. I know these people. And now, where were we?
Memories of the 18th of July 1970, when the BBC fired Kenny Everett after he suggested the Transport Minister's wife may have bribed her driving test examiner. But as we now know, that might not have been the only reason. Life with talent is never simple, is it? On now to another Commercial Radio 40th, and this time, happy birthday to a station still on air to this day.
These tests are to prepare for the start of independent local radio in the Tyne and Wear areas by the Metropolitan Broadcasting Company. The programmes of Metro Radio will be heard on 261 metres medium wave and also on 97 megahertz VHF, the same as for these test transmissions.
Hi there, this is Dave Gregory saying I hope you're going to join me every weekday evening on NBC at 6 o'clock for 75 minutes of the very latest and best from the world of pop.
Back then, the station couldn't quite make up its mind whether it was to be called Metro or the Metropolitan Broadcasting Company or NBC. But thankfully, the programmes were very clear.
Hello, I'm James Whale, and I'd like to introduce you to the other announcers on Metro. And they are ladies first.
Hello, I'm Maggie Mash.
And also...
Hello, I'm Peter Raitt.
Join in with Metro!
Every Friday evening, Maggie has a programme that's called Woman's Weekly. Maggie, can you tell us more?
Well, Woman's Weekly is a programme specially for the woman who's been working during the week and hasn't been able to hear the afternoon programme. It will include interviews, live discussions in the studio, and other items of interest for women.
Thank you, Maggie. Also, every evening from 4 o'clock, there's a programme that's called Roundup. Peter, I wonder if you could tell us all about that.
Yes, it's called Roundup because that's exactly what it is.
Ah, I get the idea, Peter. Thank you very much indeed. We're with you. How posh was James Whale on that? Ready for Metro's day one, the station's theme was queued up and ready to go on the new reel-to-reel tape recorder. Or was it?
This is Metro Radio, 261 metres in the medium wave band, and 97 VHF. The time is 6 o'clock, and to officially open the station, here is the managing director, Mr. Bruce Lewis.
The launch of Metro in Newcastle this week in 1974. Happy 40th birthday, Metro.
We are now going on the air for the very first time, bringing independent radio to you who live in the Tyne and Wear areas. At this moment, you are witnessing the birth of a new radio station.
As Metro launched, the future of commercial radio was still very much in doubt. Let's take a look at an article in this week's Press Cuttings, 18th of July, 1974. The Times here reporting that cutbacks in independent local radio are likely, but the Independent Broadcasting Authority wants to license the remaining stations to take the network to 60. Back then, commercial stations were simulcasting, of course, the same programmes on the AM and FM dial, but one by one they launched the AM offspring.
It's 8:28 across West Yorkshire, and it's here. The all-time great music station, Magic 828. Ray Stroud, Peter Tate, Mike Bitty, Alex Hall, Johnny Moran, Noddy Holder, David Hamilton, and Roger Kirk.
Good morning, good morning.
Thank you, John Myers, on voiceover duty. Memories of this week in 1990 and Radio Air splitting its frequencies in Leeds and forming Air FM and Magic 828.
So that's the song that starts Magic 828. It's the Beatles and Magical Mystery Tour.
We've just popped the champagne cork. The smell is delicious and the boss is covered at the moment. We'll get him a towel in a second.
On Radio 2 this week, 2 years ago, a new audio identity, the first for 15 years. And a moment almost too exciting for Chris Evans.
And stand by for a brand new news jingle. I'm very excited. Are you ready? Whoa! This is Radio 2.
BBC News at 7 o'clock on Monday, the 16th of July. Good morning, this is Moira Stewart.
The new jingle package from Wise Buddha, complete with the logo licensed from Groove Addicts, aired on Radio 2 this week, 2 years ago. You only have one chance to get most links right, but some links matter a little more than others. This was a pretty important one from Richard Skinner, 29 years ago this week.
It's 12 noon in London, 7 a.m. in Philadelphia, and around the world it's time for Live Aid. Wembley welcomes their Royal Highnesses, the Prince and Princess of Wales.
Richard Skinner. Classic radio now, and it's back 75 years to a show my dad still talks about, and I never knew really what he was talking about until I heard this.
Contact! Stand clear! It's that man again!
It's that man again! It's that man again! It's the Tommy Hanfield Field!
He may be a philological filibuster, but despite his passion for prevarication, this terminological inexactitudinarian still remains...
It was enough to amuse us 75 years ago. It's That Man Again, launching this week in 1939. It was a comedy series on the BBC, starring Tommy Handley, best known for the catchphrase...
Can I do your nails, sir?
Well, crack me on the cranium. If it isn't Mrs. Mop, the child with the bottomless bucket.
When Tommy died in 1949 from a brain hemorrhage very suddenly, too, it was quite a shock for a nation which had grown to love Tommy through the darkest days of war. And no less than the Bishop of London, John W.C. Wand, paid tribute.
From the highest to the lowest in the land, men and women of every station have found in his program an escape from their troubles and anxieties into the realm of whimsical nonsense.
How much radio meant back then. ITBAR launching this week in 1939. So, with the commercial radio sustaining service, the Superstation, launching this week 26 years ago...
The Superstation.
Gwyneth Williams appointed controller of Radio 4 years ago...
In fact, that's the thing about this job, that is, you know, you have a sort of intellectual understanding of how closely people guard and love the network, but it's a much more visceral thing when you get the job, and you can see, you know, with a postbag.
Beacon launching in Shropshire 27 years ago.
The new Beacon radio service for Shropshire will bring you your own programmes.
And the ITA becoming the IBA this week 42 years ago.
The IBA is testing on these wavelengths.
Those are this week's radio moments.
Radio moments.
Thank you, David. Thanks, Roy, as well, for the news. And to our guest this week, Chris Pegg from Metro Radio. And, of course, the legendary James Whale. Thanks too to Bowers, John Dash and Radio Air in Leeds for the loan of a studio. We'll have another podcast for you next week right here. Thanks for listening.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.